So good morning. Welcome back to Meta Life and Creative Disturbance. My name is Yvon Tina. I am a PhD student here at the University of Texas at Dallas. And I have the great pleasure today to be with Lindsay French. Good morning, Lindsay.
Good morning, Yvon.
Can you tell us a few words about who you are and what you're doing?
Sure. My name is Lindsay French. I currently am living in Chicago, Illinois, where I teach at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. And I teach in the Art and Technology Studies Department and the Contemporary Practices Department.
Okay, but you're also an artist, right?
Yes, I'm also, sorry. Yeah, I'm also a practicing artist, so my practice is based here in the city as well.
Mm-hmm. So your work deals with a process of translation of non-human's mode of perception into some kind of human expression. So where does the idea come from and how did you get interested in those kind of art process and activity?
So I have a background in landscape studies, so kind of looking at the landscape both ecologically, but also kind of socially, politically, culturally. Really kind of approaching landscape and environment in a variety of ways. And then I received my MFA in at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago as well in the Art and Technology Studies Department. So my practice kind of comes from this blending of this idea of kind of looking at technology critically and from an artistic perspective, but also kind of grounded in an interest and a study in landscape and kind of plant biology.
Just an aside question, you've been inspired by, I guess, Eduardo Kach work at SAIC?
Yes. Yeah, I advised with Eduardo as a graduate student, and we currently have a new faculty member, Heather Dewey-Hagborg, who also works with biotech, art and biotech at SAIC. So yes, there's definitely a contingency.
Okay, so yes, I've seen that you're very interested in the slippage between nature and technology, mm-hmm. how plant communication overlaps with human technology. Mm-hmm. Can you please just say, can you tell us more a little bit about that and your proper work?
Sure. Yeah. So, I'm really interested in this idea. So looking at if you look at the landscape as a kind of way of reading, you know, reading ecology, but also kind of reading human culture. There's a lot of kind of environmental history that sees a really clear distinction between human culture and nature as like quite problematic. In terms of, you know, how we can relate to our environment or consider ourselves within it or as a part of it, or whether we can or not, or what kind of role we take with that. So I guess like that's maybe kind of a starting place for me. And a lot of my personal research kind of has brought me towards plant communication specifically, and ways of conceiving of communication from a biological sense, and really finding an interest with how that relates to contemporary communication systems that we're all involved in, like things like the internet or mobile communication.
So you use a word in our previous discussion, which was a natural technology. Do you have a proper definition of this term? I mean, did you just invent it, coin it, or?
I mean, I think I just, you know, that just kind of happened when we were talking, but I've been thinking about it. But yeah, the idea of, so I guess when I think about, you know, human technology, there's this idea that it's something that's like completely developed from human minds and kind of from like industrial or non-natural places. But then I think about like the further you get into studying, for example, what plants do or what certain systems occur in nature. Like, I guess I consider that as a kind of natural technology. Like photosynthesis might be a kind of natural technology. But I'm not sure, there might be some history to that term. If there is, I don't know. I don't know of it yet.
But clearly you're interested in the blurring between the boundaries between the blurring of the boundaries between human and non-human. So do you also call that object-oriented ontology or philosophy?
Yeah, I'm interested in, and I've been reading a lot of kind of the object-oriented ontology and also new materialism, very influenced by Jane Bennett's work, for example. Yeah, but I find that thinking about material and thinking about like processes and relationships with material can kind of root us in more of an understanding or more of a maybe a closer relationship with some of the living things around us on a day-to-day basis. Yeah,
I've read a notion. I mean, I don't know the proper definition of that, of this notion, which is vital materiality.
Mm-hmm. So vital materiality is this idea that all material has some quality of life within it. It's different from, you know, panpsychism, for example, but it is the idea that there's some kind of like embedded lifelike quality in material. I consider it, you know, this might be kind of taking some liberties with some of these definitions, but I consider a lot of the kind of history of a material, or like longer time frames, or like larger definitions of where material kind of fits within a system, as a way of like considering its vitality or its kind of like lifeness, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. But it raised another question, because you told me that you're not currently living using life as a medium of your work, mm-hmm. but if you consider that there is some lifelikeness properties or, you know, qualities in any materials, I mean any natural materials, why don't you extend this definition of life to your own practice?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. You know, I think, I guess maybe I'm a little bit wary of, like thinking about the term bioart. It seems like, for example, it seems like there are some definitions of it that I hesitate to, that I maybe hesitate to fracture, but I suppose thinking in those terms, like, for example, I think about sometimes my own role as a facilitator of communication between two non-human things. And in that case, this kind of system that mm-hmm. set up includes like me as a material within it, kind of moving or altering or changing landscapes. And so I guess yeah. in that sense, yeah, defining the work or defining the parameters would include life as part of the art form. So yeah, maybe I'll reconsider that.
No. But as intermediator or facilitator of non-human communication, is there any political engagement in your artwork?
Yeah, I think there is. I think it's not necessarily, I think it's not overt. And that's actually somewhat important to me. But I think about, like a lot of the work that I make proposes, maybe like new forms of listening, or kind of insists on listening. Mm-hmm. And that to me feels actually like quite political, like to redefine, listening as a form of, as an action, and possibly even a form of activism, mm-hmm. seems really important. I hesitate in some ways to talk about, well, I don't hesitate, but I don't consider the work like solution oriented, for example. And I think sometimes like activism and politics kind of come with an expectation of solution. But I do kind of seek to redefine like listening and
perceptions.
I'm sorry?
I said perceptions, maybe?
Yeah, perception, awareness, all of those things as kind of political acts, but maybe not so overtly.
Okay, by redefining perception, you make use of sensors and captors, if I'm not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
What is lost when translating non-human communication to a human man or to a human body? You come out with some insight about what might be lost or gained in that experience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think actually there's a lot that's lost in most of those kinds of translations. So with a lot of my work, I look to set up kind of to the best of my ability or kind of very earnestly systems for translation, systems for communication, which involve translation. So for example, I'll take a sensor, I'll develop a way of having a conversation with an oak tree or a plant, for example. Which involves using a sensor to kind of read some kind of change on that organism. And then, you know, so it's basically like this electrical impulse that kind of moves from through the sensor, through this computer program. It's then read as a point of data, and then I have to craft an algorithm that then translates that data into something meaningful. So there's these kind of like really quite long, drawn out processes where decisions have to be made along the way. So the question is about, like what's lost or gained?
Okay, so what is lost or gained? Is lost forever? Or there's any way to keep that that material and to transform it in something maybe more tangible or more perceptible?
Hmm. Oh, that's a good question. Well, I guess anytime you're kind of using a sensor or trying or attempting to augment the senses in some way, you're also losing some other sense of your own, or you're losing in the mediation, you're losing a certain amount of clarity. So I don't know if there's a way to kind of find whatever is lost, but I think each encounter, there's something that's being kind of exchanged. And so sensors look to kind of grab some very, very specific reading or some specific change or movement. Some kind of change or information, which is then kind of dragged through a very long or an earnest process. But then on the other side, I think a lot of times that real communication kind of occurs outside of whatever you kind of set up for that communication to occur within. Like it kind of occurs outside of any of those channels, I think. That was kind of roundabout, but does that kind of answer or?
yeah, of course. Fortunately, we would like to talk more with you, but we have a format to respect. But anyway, I still have a few questions about three of your current artwork or maybe past one, which are Fighter Vision, Mountain by Tree, and Packet Switch Grass, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's Packet Switch Grass. Excuse my accent. So what is the articulation or how these projects are related each to together?
Mm-hmm. So in general, I think I think about my body of work as a kind of ecology of works because distinguishing between them is not always easy. But the PhytoVision series is this attempt to embody the impossibility of the phytocentric perspective. So what does it mean to take on, what would it mean to try to embody like the phytocentric perspective? So that series is a number of a number of broadcast television for plants? Sorry?
Yeah. Maybe I should start with that very simple question. What is a phytocentric perspective?
So this idea of the phytocentric perspective comes from semiotics, actually. Martin Crampton kind of described the impossibility of trying to have the phytocentric perspective. So like the idea of what would it be like to think like a plant, or to be in the position of a plant, or to signal like a plant. So that impossibility is really exciting to me. Because I think if we could approach that, I think we could learn a lot more about ourselves or about the world around us, or the ways that we're kind of engaging in our landscapes. So that's kind of where that term comes from.